Hello, and welcome to another episode of Untangling. Remember, no matter how you're listening to this podcast today, make sure that you're subscribing, you're giving us a rating that you feel is fair. A lot of times I hear people say, you know, just give us a 5-star rating, but you clearly have to earn that 5-star rating. And also, in order to grow the audience, don't be shy in regards to sharing these episodes with your friends. So hope you're able to learn something today in regards to untangling, and we will get started. So I've been extremely busy lately, especially with being president of CIAHU. We had a huge Medicare summit, and it was a great turnout with great speakers. So we'll dive deep into that a little bit later on in the show. So today is July 20th, and I had to drive down to Champaign because for diversity, equity, and inclusion, there was a lunch and learn that started around 10:45 and it ended at 1 p.m. this afternoon. So just heading out to Champaign, I didn't know what to expect. And it turned out to be a pretty amazing experience. So the way to explain where I work is we are at a new building that is roughly, I would say, maybe 3 years old, if that. And we met at the bottom of our building, which is enormous, great setup. And it was basically everybody who's involved in diversity, equity, and inclusion. But I think this is something they're going to roll out to the corporation. And when I got there, there's a gentleman, his name's Nathan, African-American, extremely well-dressed. The first time I met Nathan was actually at our old location. And here's what's crazy, okay? At the time, we were probably a $1.7 billion company. Today, we are a $2.5 billion company, projected to hit about $5.5 billion by 2025. And when I started, we were in a mall, and the mall was falling apart, and we had this pretty cool little location, and I didn't know what to make of it. All I knew was, okay, this is where I work, it is what it is, and there's no way you would have been able to convince me my organization was making $1.7 billion, $1.8 billion at that time. So we end up moving to a very, very fancy building. I mean, millions and millions and millions of dollars for this new building. But I remember seeing Nathan there, African-American gentleman, well-dressed. And he's just one of those people where if you see him, you never forget him. So we've always kind of just like bumped into each other. You know, I'm on the sales, the health insurance sales side of the business. He's on the customer service side of the business. And we've always just bumped into each other. You had the pandemic that happened, so we saw each other less and less. Every now and then, I'd go into the building, we'd bump into each other. But I tell you that because he was actually leading this diversity, equity, and inclusion lunch and learn. And it was just powerful, powerful stuff. So I spoke with Nathan, you know, got to know his background, parents, military. He grew up in Illinois and just really, really savvy. Just if you could have a customer service representative, it would be Nathan. And he kicks things off with diversity, equity, and inclusion. There's probably roughly like maybe 20 of us in this room with a quote. And the quote is, "Equality is giving everyone a pair of shoes. Equity is giving everyone a pair of shoes that fit." And he said, to start today off, we're going to watch a video. And with this video, you know, there's foul language. They use the N-word. It's very offensive. But this is a video that is done by Jane Elliott. And for those of you who don't know who Jane Elliott is, Jane Elliott is the third grade teacher from Iowa who did the experiment Blue Eyes versus brown eyes, vice versa. And I've seen this video before, but after watching it again, I think it's one of those videos that it might just be a good thing in regards to maybe watching it at least once a year. I've seen it many times, and every time you watch it, it becomes more and more impactful. And what's so sad about the video is that, you know, it took place in the mid-60s. And the reason I know that is because after Martin Luther King was assassinated, Jane Elliott said she was watching the news as she was ironing an Indian teepee. Because her class, they'd make a teepee, and the following year, the next class would paint it. So it's just a tradition that she had. And she's ironing the teepee, and she always spoke about how Native Americans were mistreated. So that's what kind of brought it about. But she was watching the news after Martin Luther King was assassinated. And she says, I remember seeing this white newscaster interviewing a black priest or community leader. And the white newscaster said, how are you going to keep your people in line? We know things are going to get out of control. There's going to be riots. What are you going to do to keep your people in line? We know it's a sad thing that happened with Martin Luther King being killed. But what are you going to do to keep your people in line? And she said it just bothered her. The level of being condescending, the lack of empathy, the lack of sympathy. Just simply, Martin Luther King died. Who's next? Please keep your people in line. And the white newscaster said, after JFK died, here's what we had to do to make sure the country didn't fall apart. And she said, if this is how an adult understands this situation, and this is how they're explaining it, how are her kids going to be able to understand this? And so she started the blue eye, brown eye experiment. And with the blue eye, brown eye, it was simply on day one, the blue-eyed kids had all the power. So all the brown-eyed kids felt all the discrimination. They felt less than. They felt that they were being targeted. It broke up a lot of friends that in a split second, because somebody with authority says you're better than, people actually bought it. And then on the following day, it was the kids with the brown eyes where, you know, Jane Elliott said that, hey, everything I said yesterday, that wasn't true. It is now the kids with the brown eyes who have the power and not the kids with the blue eyes, because those kids with the blue eyes, they're always late for class. They're loud. They don't listen. And so now the brown eyed kids are like happy, like, yeah, it's payback time. And at the end of the experiment, and you got to watch it. This is on PBS. If you haven't watched it, I recommend you do. And another thing that was extremely alarming to me was in our class was the amount of people who haven't seen this. So I would say out of the 20, maybe 4 of us raised our hands like we've seen this before. Everybody else hasn't. And you had just a range of emotions within the class. So one of the most powerful things, and Jane Elliott alludes to this, is she noticed that whoever was in power, whether it's the blue eyes or the brown eyes, they also excelled in regards to their exams and their test scores. So now what ends up happening is the University of Stanford gets involved saying, wow, you're telling me within 24 hours you could have a high performer become a low performer based on the impact of racism. And you got to figure, this is the mid to late 60s. So this is groundbreaking research. So Stanford University gets involved. And this ends up growing and growing to a point where she is now assisting correctional facilities that are experiencing racism. Jane Elliott has been on Jimmy Fallon. She's written a couple books. She is out and about and still making things happen, still making people extremely uncomfortable when it comes to the topic of race. And what's so fascinating is even today, it's almost like, have things gotten better? Absolutely, but not much has changed. So it was just a powerful presentation just to give just to get people's feedback. And one of the questions was, what was one of the biggest takeaways in regards to your feeling towards this experiment? And I raised my hand and I said, my biggest takeaway is the courage that Jane had to be able to pull this in mid-1960s in Iowa that is 98% white, extremely religious. She put herself on the line. She put her family on the line, all to prove a point on how detrimental racism is, the impacts of racism. And so I just can't get over her courage. She's also extremely brilliant, just her back and forths, because she ends up challenging adults as well in this documentary, and just her fight, she's truly a American hero. Another thing that happened that really stood out to me and what makes this documentary so impactful, and I'll make sure to include it in the notes if I'm able to find it on YouTube. So the audience, if you haven't seen it, you could just simply click on the link and get a chance to watch it. It's definitely worth your time. But what else makes this documentary so powerful is the fact that she brings the students back. And the students get to watch a video of themselves on how they behave, their reactions, their emotions. And they're just sitting there in disbelief. One part that stands out is the best of friends, when Blue Eyes were in power, the kid with blue eyes went up to his friend and just punched him in the gut because he was so frustrated in regards to a brown eye simply questioning him. And just seeing them, they grew up, they've had families. And this one guy said something really interesting. He said he wasn't part of the study. He was now married to this lady who was in fact part of the study. And he said, before I proposed, I'm in the military and we travel the world. We see a lot of diverse people. And my biggest question was simply, could she handle this lifestyle? And then she told me about this experiment. He said, I read a couple of your books to Jane Elliott. And he said, forget ready. Like, she helped change the world. And so, you know, they ended up getting married. And you also had feedback from people where people in town would use racist slurs, and they would go up to these people and say, listen, you can't judge that person until you've walked in their shoes. And oh, by the way, when it comes to stealing, not being a good person, you want to blame black people for that? I've seen white people do the exact same. What are your opinions in regards to that? So she basically created like these foot soldiers who now, based on the discrimination they went through, they're foot soldiers. And it was just fascinating. So very intense day. You could tell in the room there were so many people who were not comfortable. However, it was definitely needed and long overdue. I take great pride in regards to with diversity, equity, and inclusion. I was on the ground floor, and now watching this thing evolve throughout the corporation is definitely something to hang my hat on, and just positive, positive results. The other thing that happened is after we watched that video, Nathan shared with us a very interesting story when he was a salesman selling cars. And he said that as a salesman, he is socioeconomically biased. And what that means is he would look for the people with the nice watch, the women holding on to the designer purses, the people who are well-dressed, well-groomed. And as a salesperson, these are the people he looked for to sell cars. And he said, you know what? The people I avoided were the farmers with those overalls coming in, and I did not want to deal with them. And he said, one day he was boxed in and everybody's at lunch. This farmer walks up, overalls, And Nathan goes, I had no choice but to help this guy. I didn't even want to help him. And the farmer, you know, just started talking to him in regards to what he wanted to do. And Nathan said he learned a very, very valuable lesson that day. It turns out with farmers for farming season, what they'll do is they will come in and they will buy a fleet. So what that means is, let's just say farming season's coming up, they'll come in and buy four Ford F-150s for that year's harvest. And Nathan said, I sat there, I sold four cars and trucks to this man while everybody was at lunch. And he said, after that transaction, I sat there until this day, he can't shake it. He thought back of how much money in commission he lost avoiding these farmers coming in, wanting to buy a car, and simply judging a book by its cover. He said it's something he deals with to this day. So that's how powerful bias is, where people are willing or not knowingly lose a lot of money because of a preconceived notion or belief. So really, really powerful stuff. And then the other question was simply, what do you think is one of the most diverse places you will find people in America? And that answer is actually a sports game. And the reason is, if you are a sports fan, if you're wearing the colors, everybody gets along. You don't talk about politics. You don't talk about sexual orientation. You don't talk about person's wealth. You're just rooting on your team. And the flip side to that question is, I raised my hand because I know this answer. And I said, church. And Nathan said, you are exactly right. Church is the least diverse place people will gather in America on any given day. So you have sports, people rooting on a team, and then you have church, which is supposed to be the holier than thou, that they actually have the diversity problem. You have black churches, you have white churches, you have Latino churches. It goes on and on and on. So I found that piece of tidbit to be a little bit interesting. But I'll be honest with you, a lot of us walked in there not knowing what to expect. And a lot of us walked out with like, what was that? It really blew our minds. And I think there's a lot of people after that experience who are going to do some serious, serious soul searching. Because, you know, racism is clearly an issue. Discrimination is clearly an issue. And it impacts business. And one of the ways that it impacts business is, are you able to leave your baggage at the door? What does that mean? So if you're working for a health insurance provider, and let's just say they're located in the state of Illinois, and you are a devoted Christian whose views on abortion is you are pro-life. Now, can you leave your baggage at the door when you walk through those doors? So if a customer calls in and says that I need to see if my benefits qualify for abortion services, that not only are you professional with that customer, you're giving that customer accurate information and you're assisting that customer through difficult times. Let's just say that you do not believe in gay marriage. Can you leave your baggage at the door if a man or a woman calls up and says, I want to know what type of benefits my partner qualifies for? We are newly married. So this is an exciting time in this gay or lesbian couple's life. And because of your bigotry, what experience are you gonna give that customer? Because based on your belief, anybody who's gay or a lesbian bothers you. So that's why this is so important. Because what it does is, it asks the question, can you leave your beliefs at the door? And once you walk through that door, are you able to function and do your job? I know a lot of people listening to this, you're probably just like a little confused. saying that really bothers certain people to a point they cannot do their jobs. Yes, and if you read the news, you'll see couples being turned down in regards to contraceptions. You'll see people being turned down in regards to any abortion medication they might need. So yes, it does impact business. And this is extremely important for corporations because at the end of the day, it's operating within the law and it's not operating based on what you believe in. And if it's something that you believe in thoroughly, you have to leave and go start your own business. That's the beauty in America. You don't have to be part of anything that you do not want to be a part of. But what's not fair is people trying to get service that have put their politics aside. They literally need to know whether it's a life-saving surgery, whether it's a life-saving benefit, whether it's just inquiring about what their benefits are, that you're giving them factual information because you left your biases at the door. So again, just extremely powerful, the impacts, the downstream impacts that being biased, that racism has throughout businesses and everyday life. But overall, you know, I reached out to one of Nathan's leads and I just told them he knocked it out of the park. What a talent. Well deserved. And I truly would love to see these continue throughout the organization, which they will. With that, a few things. One from Jane Elliott. She said, good listeners, and this is for the untangling audience, good listeners will listen from the beginning to the end. And I thought that was a pretty powerful statement. Are you capable of listening to the beginning of somebody's sentence till they are done with their sentence without interrupting them? So that is a tactic for good listeners. And one of the things I've always noticed about good listeners, they seem to be extremely successful in anything that they do. I've said it, two of my radio heroes, one is Howard Stern. His listening skills are something I've never seen before. The other one is Joe Madison. And with Joe Madison, he has hearing that literally I'm like, there's no way you can be born to listen the way he does. So if you want to see two masters at their craft, Howard Stern, Joe Madison would be my recommendation. The other one was from Nathan, and it's simply socioeconomic profiling. When you look at a person based on their financials, and it is a form of biases that isn't discussed enough. And one of the things I've noticed about socioeconomic profiling is every scam, every con, it always starts off with, well, I thought they were successful. They look successful. Wow. Are you telling me they rented a Bentley for the day to pull a scam on me? Yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you. I'll never forget, I was in Las Vegas and, you know, the housing market hit. And a coworker of mine, she's like, hey, I'm going to meet this guy who has a great business venture. So we go together to meet this guy at Starbucks and he pulls up in a Bentley. And the minute the guy starts talking, I just said, hey, listen, you know what? This isn't for me. I got up, walked away. Long story short, 3 weeks later, figured out it was in fact a scam. This guy was on his last luck. Didn't even pitch a business venture. He pitched a Ponzi scheme. And I saw right through that, Bentley and all. So socioeconomic profiling, make sure it's something that you're not doing. So two powerful takeaways from today. Yeah, so in regards to CIAHU, we had the Medicare Summit. So every year, we will have a Medicare summit. And for those of you who don't know what a Medicare summit is, it's simply for 2023 planning, okay? And you got to be very careful because with CMS guidelines, there's only certain things you can talk about. You can't sell, you can't talk about benefits, you can't talk about anything that's going to happen for 2023. But the purpose of the summit and the reason why it's helpful is because we will invite carriers, national carriers were in attendance, local health insurance carriers were in attendance, we had brokers in attendance, we had the VP of pharmacy in attendance. So it's a pretty big deal, and there's a lot of work that goes into the Medicare summit planning that, you know, people just don't see. So we usually start planning for the CIAHU Expo and the Medicare summit in November, and then they happen March and July of the following year. That's how big of a deal this is. So one of the things I truly believe in is preparation is the separation. Stay ready so you never have to get ready. And I say that because we were a cohesive unit in regards to what speakers do we want to get to speak. What do we want them to speak about? What's the hot topic? And what's hot in November might not be hot in July. So we've always done a really good job in regards to just getting broker, health insurance, hospital feedback. What are you seeing? What can we talk about? But overall, it was a great event. It was a 4.5-hour event. As the president, I was the lead. I always start off through chapter rules with the national anthem. You know, we broadcast it. So we were live at the Paradise Casino in Peoria. We broadcast it for those who wanted to watch it from home. And we had a board member who had an out-of-the-box idea who said, and, you know, this was back in November, what do you think about a panel of Medicare experts? The crowd could ask questions and you can answer. And we felt like it was a great idea. And we had the panel. I was part of the panel, one of the Medicare experts. And the feedback we got is, you all nailed it, hit it out of the park, okay? That was so informative. Every speaker did such a great job. You know, I could spend literally 4 hours talking about it, which I'm not going to do. But I am going to talk about a speaker that truly just stood out to me. And they all stood out to me. I'm talking about A++, every one of them. We had legislative updates from the state, federal government. So we had a speaker who tackled that. We had a pharmacy update in regards to biosimilars. What's next in the state of pharmacy? I'm talking about world-class speakers. And we had a speaker by the name of Andy Neri. And what's so fascinating about Andy Neri is that he is an ex-baseball player for the Milwaukee Brewers. And I had the privilege of introducing him, you know, to the audience, to the people attending virtually. And I had no idea what I was in store for. And Andy Neri, I'll tell you a little bit about his story. So he is an undersized pitcher. And he said that in life, in order to get an opportunity, you simply just have to show up at the right time. So through high school, he could not get a scholarship. Senior year, he finally got a scholarship to a D3 college, and he is a baseball pitcher. So senior year, he's playing a team, and he goes 9 innings, and he gave up 1 hit. But he said that day, the scouts from the University of Wisconsin were in attendance, and they couldn't believe what they saw. And so they end up reaching out to him, like, hey, do you have time to sit? We'd like to talk to you. This is a guy, Andy, with a scholarship to a D3 school. And he said because of one game, the right opportunity, taking advantage of that opportunity, he pitched the game of his life. He let up 1 hit. And that 1 hit was to a batter by the name of Curtis Granderson. Played for the Detroit Tigers. Went on to win a couple World Series rings with the New York Yankees. Played for the Marlins. And is probably arguably a Hall of Famer. And he said what's crazy about Curtis Granderson's story is that base hit, he didn't have any scholarships either. But there was a coach in the audience who saw that at bat, and they ended up reaching out to Curtis as well. The rest is history. So back to Andy. He talks to Wisconsin. They're so impressed, they give him a full ride to the University of Wisconsin. At University of Wisconsin, he said his first 2 years, you know, they just have knuckleheads on the team, himself included. And, you know, he's not where he wants to be. Junior year, he said something very interesting happened. He was named a captain. And once you become a captain, something happens to you where you're like, you know what? I'm in charge now. I have to change this culture. So Wisconsin, he goes on to have a decent career, but, you know, nothing great except his last game where, you know, they had a pitcher pitching who was getting killed. And he's thinking, what do I do after I graduate? You know, I wanted to go to the pros. Now I can't go to the pros. What do I do? So he comes in and pitches the game of his life, and in attendance are recruiters from the Milwaukee Brewers. And he said the season ends, he gets a job as a data analyst, and he goes, for those of you who've done data analysts, he started at 8 a.m., he said by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he said, I cannot do this job another day. As he's walking home, he gets a call, it's one of the recruiters from the Milwaukee Brewers, saying, how would you like to join our organization? He said he was on a plane the next morning and their triple A team, their triple league team is out in Montana. And again, you have triple A, double A, so on and so forth. So he flies to Montana and he just can't believe his luck. He's just so happy to be there. So in Montana, he gets an opportunity where they're playing a rival and they're heading to the stadium. The coach tells him, hey, this crowd is very rowdy. You got to get ready, okay? We're going to be calling your number. You got to be ready. And that's what the coach is telling Andy. And so, you know, the pitcher pitches and they fall behind. Andy comes in and he goes, I'm warming up. This is my first big start in the minor leagues. And as he's running out, he goes to the mound. He's warming up. And he just starts hearing faint chants. And he can't make out what the chant is. And it starts getting louder and louder and louder. And it's the crowd. And the crowd is saying, you're 5'6". You can't pitch. You're 5'6". You can't pitch. And Andy says he's on that mound. And he goes, do you guys know what imposter syndrome is? He goes, I sat on that mound and I said to myself, what if they're right? And he said that's the first time doubt has ever crept into his mind. And he's such a great speaker. I'm doing him no justice. Everybody in the audience started laughing when he said that. And the purpose of him telling us this story was taking advantage of each opportunity that you get. That's why it's always important to show up, because you never know who's in attendance. And, you know, once his career ends, he gets involved in the insurance field and he realizes very early on that this is an industry he could thrive in. So he said it was very difficult at first. And, you know, then he ends up moving to Denver. And he said it was difficult at first because in Milwaukee, in Montana, Idaho, he made a name for himself. Now you got to move to Denver where nobody knows who he is and he's starting a new venture along with his family. And so he said what he did was he was in insurance, but he said, how could I be different than anybody else? And what he realized was he was going to send out a mailer, and that mailer was going to simply focus on three bullet points. One was strategy. The other bullet point was the results of strategy. And the third bullet point, and again, paraphrasing, I'm doing them no justice, was the importance of strategy. And so he'd send these mailers out, 25, and then, you know, the next month, it'd be 50, and then the following month, it would be 100. And slowly but surely, people started calling him, and they're saying, hey, I have a group health insurance. I get your mailers, and I really like how you don't talk about insurance, but you talk about what's important to our business, which is strategy, you know, the importance of strategy, the results you need to get from strategy. And the HR people and the businesses would tell them, would you be able to come in? Because we haven't talked to our broker in over 2 years. We haven't talked to our broker in over 6 months. We haven't talked to our broker in over 3 months. And he says he couldn't believe the amount of business he was getting from these mailers. So business starts to take off a little. And the next part of this is, okay, how do I grow business further? And he said one of the lessons he learned was just showing up. So he'd have these speaking engagements. And at first it was, business is booming. So there'd be 50 people in attendance. There'd be 60 people in attendance. And he goes, I couldn't believe the amount of money I was making by just simply doing the little things. And then he said he had a meeting that would forever change his life. He shows up, there's 10 people. And those 10 people, you know, very quiet, paying attention, just taking a lot of notes. And Andy's just like, you know, my confidence is down. Like, man, I came all this way for 10 people. And what he later finds out is that those 10 people represented of the top 50 of the Fortune 500 companies. And they were looking to move some of their benefits. And they came together through a referral system. And Andy said, that showed me it's not the size of the audience, it's who's in the audience. And this really resonated with me because a lot of times you'll show up to a speaking engagement, you're prepared, three people show up, and you're just like, man, this is going nowhere. What if that one person in there is the CEO of a Fortune 500 company? Would you rather that person there or 100, not to be harsh, nobodies who can't make a decision? And he said, just treat every customer, okay, the right way, because you don't know who that customer is. And it kind of ties into the socioeconomic profiling that I talked about before. And the other advice that Andy gave us that really stood out is the importance of marketing. And he goes, 10 years ago, what did you see when you walked down a milk aisle? You saw milk, 1%, 2% skim milk, milk. And then he goes, within the last 5 years or so, what have you really seen? And he said, you started to see a lot more almond milk. And with almond milk, okay, in marketing, you want to be the almond milk in an aisle filled with milk. Something that stands out, something that's going to grow, something that does things a little bit differently. And now look at where almond milk is today. You have almond milk, you have cashew milk, you have silk milk, you have all the different brands of almond milk. You name the milk, now everybody's following suit. You want to be the almond milk in the all milk aisle. That's marketing. Meeting your customers where they are. He said, you don't like podcasts? Nobody cares. Your customers listen to podcasts. They like it. You don't like Facebook? Nobody cares. Your customers are on Facebook. You don't like Instagram? Nobody cares about your opinion. Your customers are on Instagram. You don't like Reddit? Guess what? Your customers are on Reddit. Meet them where they are. This isn't about your feelings. It's about growing your business. And we just sat there blown away. And the first thing I did is after I called a few friends, you know, who are trying to grow their business. And I go, hey, here's this speaker, Andy Neary, who spoke, you know, for our CIAHU event. Here's what he said. Here's, you know, some of the strategies. And my friends were blown away. So he came in there that day and I called, I don't know how many people to tell them about this person. And I also gave the contact information. Have Andy come in and speak for your organization. Now, with CIAHU as the president, it's a great organization, a big organization. But guess what? For my other company in healthcare, we have 9,000 employees. We're always looking for speakers. We have the broker summit. We have all staff meetings we could use Andy to speak in. So here I am in attendance, and I could possibly open up the world of healthcare to Andy because he showed up to our event to speak when he didn't have to. because he's very, very successful. But he said, you know what? This is an opportunity. And because of that, I'm going to reach out to my VP and say, you have to get this guy to come speak for our organization. So wanted to share that with the Untangling audience. And I'll leave you with this. Andy said something. Every now and then you hear something that kind of just changes things for you. And he told the audience, not all revenue is good revenue. And what do I mean by that? Your clients who are a headache, get rid of them. It's not worth your time. The client's always threatening to leave. If you don't treat me better, great, leave. Not all revenue is good revenue. Now, the people who see the world the way you see it, the people who share your vision, the people who want to take their company to where you see their company going, that we call the good customers, make sure you're helping those people, okay? Not all revenue is good revenue. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Untangling. See you next week. In the canyons that'll never